You're listening to the Sports Therapy Association podcast, putting evidence back into soft tissue therapy.
And we're live. Welcome to the Sports Therapy Association podcast, episode 197, entitled Ask Us Anything, Therapy for Sports Teams. My name is Matt Phillips, creator of RunChatLive.com. And as always, this episode is being recorded live on a Tuesday, 8 o'clock, on the Sports Therapy Association YouTube channel and Facebook page. I say always, but I just thought next week and the week after that, we're all going to be at 9 o'clock. Okay, I'll get that out of the way now. I'll mention it afterwards because we've got coming up next week, for the next 3 weeks, a tendon special where all my guests are from Australia. I don't know what it is about Australia and tendons, but that's where they're going to be from. So very excited to mention that at the end of the show. But as for now, it's the first Tuesday of a new month, May 2024, to be precise, which means that it's an Ask Us Anything episode in which a panel of STA members share their experience and advice to answer questions either emailed in to me, matt@thesta.co.uk, or asked by the lovely folk who have given up some of their Tuesday evening to join us live. And if you are listening to the podcast and you like the idea of joining us live and to ask our guests questions directly or to chat with the other people who join us live, and therapists may be in your area, maybe just down the street from you, then all you need to do is head along to the Sports Therapy Association YouTube channel or Facebook at 8 o'clock on a Tuesday, normally at 8 o'clock, and you can join us live for it. If you prefer listening to podcasts, and that's fine as well, just please, please, please do leave a review and a rating so that the good word of our guests gets out there more. So in this episode, like I say, the topic is going to be therapy for sports teams. We did a therapy for runners last month. In June, I'm contemplating between therapy for swimmers or therapy for cyclists. I've still got to organise that. It's on my list. And if you are an STA member who works with any of those populations and you'd like to be on the live STA panel, then just email me, matt@thesta.co.uk, or message us on social media at UK_STA. It's gone very quiet with people for the STA panel. I really had to press gang a few people for tonight. No, I didn't really. They were very experienced therapists who were jumping at the chance to share their experience. But we would love to hear from you. Hopefully you'll hear from tonight's episode that it's very chilled out. It's just basically talking about what you do. Okay, it sounds much more scary than it really is. So if you are listening to the podcast and you are an STA member and you'd like to be on one of these panels, then just drop me an email. I'm just going to say hello to a few of the people who have chosen to join us live. Cecily Hislop is here in the studio. Says, evening, listening to this whilst keeping an eye on the Giro highlights. Well, now I'm thinking Giro, pronounced that wrong. Is that cycling? Well, I don't know. So if it's not running, then I've got a clue what people are talking about. Someone will have to help me with that. Oh, therapy for cyclists, please, Matt. I guess it is a cycling thing. Anything to appease my husband. Okay, Cecily, thanks for offering. Fantastic if you work with cyclists. Brian Huxley is here as well, says, hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us. If you do join us live, then what happens, basically, you can't see it if you listen to the podcast, but I can bring your message or question or comment up onto the screen along with your wonderful Facebook logo or YouTube logo. So it's a way of networking, isn't it? Sharing. But anyway, so before I bring up our STA panel for tonight, I must give a huge thanks to my guests for the last 2 weeks in our shoulder special. Professor Ian Horsley, who's athlete, health lead, physio for upper limb in UK Sports Institute, and also Joe Gibson, who's upper limb rehab specialist at Rehab for Performance. Two, I mean, they don't get much bigger than this in terms of shoulder specialists and educators in the UK and probably worldwide. If you ask anybody who is a numero uno for talking about shoulders, then those two names are going to be definitely in the top five. So we really were treated wonderfully by having them on the show. As always, you can listen to these episodes either on your favorite podcast app, including Spotify, or if you want to watch it, then you can go to YouTube and watch the recording there. So that's episode 195, 196 of the Sports Therapy Association podcast. Right, I've left them downstairs for long enough. I think it's time to bring up the STA panel for tonight's episode of Ask Us Anything, Therapy for Sports Teams.
You're listening to the Sports Therapy Association podcast, putting evidence back into soft tissue therapy.
Hey, people, hi. Thank you so much for giving up the time. I really do appreciate it. So I thought, first of all, we'll go straight into it, if that's okay. We'll have a little bit of information about yourselves, what part of the UK you're in, and how you got into working with sports teams, and what sports teams, if that's okay. I'm not going to go in any particular order. I'm just going to go to who's the right of me. So for me, that's Hazel. Tell us about yourself, Hazel.
Yeah, I'm from the wonderful Staffordshire Moorlands, right by the Roaches, beautiful part of the world. I own and run a small sports injury and well-being clinic. I've got a background in playing an all right level of hockey. I've got 13 years of experience now in the therapy world and worked with all of the teams, rugby, football, hockey, probably more recently into hockey and cricket. That's about me.
Fantastic. Respectable level of hockey. Is that you being modest or what are we talking about here? Give people a little bit more information.
So we were just at the peak, one tier down from National League. So
there we go. Thank you. Yeah. That's good to hear. And it's important because it's one of the things we'll discuss later on is, does it help or do you need to have played the team you're supporting, the type of sport at big level in order to help them? Are there advantages? Do you need it or not? So it's good to know where you all are. Fantastic. Thank you for that. Right, let's go to the other corner here. So Scott, if you'd be so kind of introduce yourself to people who for some reason haven't heard of you, just in case anyone out there has heard.
People probably fed him there. So, Scott, I also part of the STA as well. So, I run the coffee chats and regional rep stuff for the Sports Therapy Association. Sports therapist in the Northeast. So, I'm in Hartlepool in the Northeast. Currently working in rugby, so national level rugby. Historically, before this, I mainly worked in football. I worked every level from League Two Conference all the way down to low level and everything in between. Other sports teams don't be doing currently, so I also work in a sixth form one day a week, dealing with all their student athletes, so netball, rugby, football, yeah. So, been doing sports stuff now for on and off 19 years.
You guys look so useful. I'm still trying to get over 30 years for Hazel. I can't work that out. It started very
young. 13.
Oh, thank you. I was going to go, how old did you start with? A three or something? What's this? Thank you, 13. That's just going through my head. What's going on here? Great. So fantastic. And last but not least, let's move around to Lucy McDonald. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hello. So I feel like the relative rookie here because I've only really been in support therapy for the last three and a half years. So my background is in the corporate world, and then I eventually moved into the sports therapy when I saw the light. And I run my own business in Wokingham, or just near Wokingham in Berkshire, called Activate Training and Sports Therapy. And I suppose my background with working with teams is again fairly limited because I've not been in the industry for that long. However, I have a background in, I'm going to call it elite sport. It's not that elite, but I played touch rugby for England for a few years, going back a few years now, retired in 2019. But I now actually support England touch when they're doing competitions in the UK. So providing myself as a sports therapist, but also other sports therapists. So and there's a World Cup in Nottingham this year, which is very exciting. So we'll be organising therapists for that for them. So that's kind of my background with working with teams. And equally, I do a little bit of work with a local cricket team as well.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. That is elite. Come on, if you play for England, then I don't know what else is elite.
Yeah, you know.
Need to have that. Put that on your CV.
It's quite an obscure sport is the thing. So it's, you know.
Touch rugby. I thought in North that all rugby is touch rugby. It's definitely not union, is it? Oh, I'm going to get South proper rugby. Oh, we won't go into it, don't we? Let's not go there. Fantastic. Right. Well, thank you for joining us. And there's a wonderful wealth of information in there and experience with different sports, which I'm looking forward to hearing about. Just to remind you, people who have joined us live, if you're in the live lounge, then you're welcome to ask us questions. You've had a little intro now to the STA panel and their backgrounds, but feel free to ask any question. If we don't know the answer between us, then that's fine. We'll just admit it rather than making something up. But feel free to ask or indeed share any experience you guys have got or thoughts for tonight's topic of therapy for sports teams. Right then, unless I hear from you, I'm going to continue with the questions either I've received or just questions to occur with me. So we're going to start off with, what is it about working with teams that you guys enjoy? Unless you're there by force and you just can't do anything else. But I imagine there's some elements which for you guys to think, wow, I just love working with teams. Anyone could answer.
Well, I think coming from a background of having played team sport, I like the banter. It's one of the main things. So just being in and around the changing room, I don't do as much of that anymore because you have to change and develop, and most of my time is needed in the clinic. But when I do get that chance to go to games and stuff still, it's a good crack.
There you go. Which is interesting because, I mean, that kind of ties in with what I was going to follow up with the question. Does that mean to work with a team, you kind of need a little bit of that sort of personality where you're able to kind of handle that banter and be part of it rather than being kind of a little bit more introverted and not wanting to be into that?
I think it does help. I mean, not to be too graphic, but my first initiation into working with men's rugby involved basically them trying to embarrass me majorly in the changing rooms to be quite confident and just go, come back with something. Then they realise that it's not really going to work. I think it does. It's not necessarily the only thing, but I think it does help to be the character, because sometimes you need to get yourself heard occasionally. So maybe being a little bit more happy to kind of shout up and to get people to listen to you is needed.
Interesting point. Lucy, in your experience, do you need to be a little bit of an extrovert and ready to kind of shout out loud and kind of be prepared for things like that?
I think it kind of depends on the environment. I definitely, in a rugby changing room, having been in a rugby changing room as a player, you know, I kind of know what that's all about. But I think when, you know, there's different environments, different types of changing rooms, so it doesn't necessarily all have to be, you know, being super quick-witted and, you know, cutting people down and kind of, you know, closing down all the witty banter that you might get sent your way. You know, some environments are sort of, I suppose, a little bit milder.
Mm-hmm. Cricket, I guess, darts, stuff like that. Scott, in your experience, do you think personality is important if you're working with a team sport?
Yeah, I think you need to be probably not thick-skinned. You know, it depends the level you play in the club you're at. You know, I've been at a lot of different clubs, so there's some way you probably did need to be a bit more thick-skinned with coaching staff as well. Obviously, in our position, we need to kind of have that kind of relationship. The club I'm at now are very respectful of me, to be honest, and it's a decent level as well. So it's kind of, that's kind of half the battle. I think some of the issues I've had, I wouldn't say issues anyway, it's kind of lower down football. People probably think they're Premier League football, but they're not. But yeah, dressing room stuff, I suppose I'm a little bit different being a male in a male environment. But I have had females working alongside me and on placement and stuff in clubs. And sometimes you have to be a bit firmer with the players, be respectful in that situation as well.
Okay.
But going back to Hazel as well, I do it because I like the environment and I like the variety as well. I like to work with a lot of different people rather than just one person at a time as well. So it's a completely different challenge to working in clinic.
It's really interesting because I'm the odd one out here because I don't like teams. I don't like being in a team. I don't like having anyone depend on me. I don't want to depend on anyone. I run because I can get away from people. I don't want to run with people or towards people unless I'm taking some people out for training. But yeah, so I really am listening to you guys just thinking, really, God, I can't think of anything worse than being in a changing room full of people. But this is what's interesting. So I'm kind of a little bit biased and asking you about it. Other things then, before we go on to, I mean, the qualities are kind of probably going to tie in with it, but in terms of organization, are there some challenges with working for a team that you're not going to get when you're just one after the other of the clinic? What should listeners be aware of if they're thinking, oh, I really want to work with a team? What should they be prepared for?
I probably think that the amount of time you get with each individual person, you know, in a clinic environment, you're probably going to have at least 45 minutes or an hour appointment with someone. So you can spend all that time going through everything from what their problem is and, you know, what their rehab plan is. But when you're in that sort of team environment, it's probably a lot shorter and sharper. And you're probably having to think more quickly on your feet because people are asking you different things in that changing room environment, and you've got to kind of flip from one thing to the next.
Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that, Scott and Hazel?
Yeah, massively. So I think one of the things, so I play some students with me at the club quite a lot because I quite like that side of it as well. And one of the things you have to kind of temper expectations there. It's not going to be a full history taking. You're not going to be sat down with them for an hour and going through all your tests and all this. It needs to be, right, what's the issue? Let's prioritize X, Y, and Z. Has this just happened? Did it happen in the game? Did it happen in training? And try to get the answers as quick as possible. So you need to 15, 20 minutes. You know, so you have to kind of temper expectations with that as well, while also people are probably knocking on the door to try and go, are you free? No. So it's a very different environment. So you need to kind of probably change the way you work, and you haven't really got time to think with it. So you get used to it, though. You really do get used to it.
I guess you've got to have patience then. I mean, again, because I'm thinking, I just love closing the door and thinking, well, I've got an hour with you. We're really going to get to know each other and all those listening and active listening, all that sort of stuff. But in this, the environment I imagine you three have been in and currently are with teams, like you say, you're going to have people open the door quickly. You've got to stay calm and rather than just screaming and going, get out of my clinic. It's got to be, I'll see you in a second here. Don't worry. Maybe you just got to say something quick to them so they don't feel like you're kind of shoving them away, and whole set of different skills.
Yeah, well, it's the same in kind of like, so if it's a training session, I've got a player in there, I'm assessing, doing some rehab. I've lost count of how many times there's been a knock on the door you needed on the pitch now because somebody's gone down injured. So you have to switch from assessment to acute injury management, like in the blink of an eye, and then switch back again when you've dealt with that to go, right, so it's very kind of fast paced. So the organization side of it is massive because you need to know where everything is as well. So it's and kind of be able to kind of flip between the two environments, changing room, pitch, gym, that kind of thing.
Fantastic. We've got a question here already, which is great. People do feel free to bring in some questions. I will address them whenever there's a pause in our conversation. So there was something interesting here from Luke Korsberg. I'll bring it up on the screen. So Luke says, as a sports massage therapist, would you recommend getting pitch side first aid before working in teams?
Yes.
Great topic we're going to come on to eventually. What do you think?
Yes.
Yes. Next question.
No, I do think it's important. There's a lot of different ones as well, though. There's a lot of different levels. There's a lot of different varieties out there as well. So I suppose it depends what sport you're going to be working in, what level. Are you going to be doing pitch side? Are you just going to be doing training? That kind of stuff. So you need to make an informed decision on that kind of side of it first. There might even be league requirements. Like the level I'm at, we have to have the RFU FICES level 2 as a minimum, which is quite an intense course for anybody who's done it, but it's needed.
So that's interesting. So you're looking at, for insurance purposes, a different type of first aid that might get you past just clinic. But as soon as you're working with the team, you may find you need a different level of first aid.
Yep.
That's a question, by the way. It wasn't rhetorical. Yeah. Lucy Hayes, what's your experience with first aid courses?
I think it gives you the confidence to be able to deal with things a little bit more. I remember the first time I did a more in-depth first aid course. I just think, the more you do it, because you can go from a working in clinic where you're realistically very rarely ever going to need any first aid to when working with a team, you are using it constantly, constantly, constantly. And I think it's just getting that confidence to be able to deal with anything that's going to come up.
I guess we should point out as well, Luke, because I can't tell from when you said sports massage therapist, and we're going to talk about this anyway, there's certain levels of training you would need to actually be able to work pitch side if you're working with injury, for example. Now, this is where it depends when you studied, and once upon a time, pre-2016 or 13, I think it was, then the level 3 would equip you with being able to work with injury. But nowadays, since then, when they reorganize the levels, then you can't work with injury until you're level 4. So I'm imagining that to work with a team where there's going to be injury, you've got to be a minimum level 4. And I think we were talking off air where most places actually say you need to be a level 5. Is that the case in your experience, guys?
I think most jobs with a sports team, an actual, part-time or full-time job with a sports team, will be asking for a level 5, which is probably a bit of a barrier to entry for a lot of people who are perhaps level 3, level 4. So, I mean, I'm level 4 myself, so haven't done the level 5, so can't necessarily go down the route of applying for a role with any level of kind of sports teams as such. But I work with sports teams in a slightly different way, so the other guys here. So it's not necessarily the barrier to entry that that can stop you.
It's interesting because on paper, they can say, oh, yeah, we need a level 5 because level 5 is higher than level 4. It's like a bit Spinal Tap. These go up to 11. But it's depending on who you study with. I mean, I used to teach level 4 and level 5. And you know what? Just because someone's got level 5, depending on the place you study that, all that's going to mean in a lot of cases is you've done a lot more orthopedic testing, which probably aren't used that much anyway. It's being a bit cynical, but there's other level 5s, more modern level 5s out there who are treating what level 5 really should be, which is more of a in-depth analysis of what's going on and understanding pain more, for example, understanding the kind of psychosocial factors and everything like that. But for somebody who is level 4 on a traditional thing, I mean, do you think, Lucy, in your studies that you are missing anything at the moment? Do you feel like, because I haven't done level 5, I shouldn't be doing this? Or
I guess it depends how you work with teams. And actually, that's a whole big question that I'd probably ask you offline, Matt, is about level 4, level 5, and what is the right route to go. But but in terms of how I work with sports teams, I don't think I need to have a level 5 to be able to do that, because, you know, it's more kind of, for example, I sponsor a cricket team locally, and so that helps obviously get my name out there in the local area. But also I work with them and have sort of offered things like a clinic on a training night that they're offering. And so, you know, you have a changing room and you've got people coming in and out, but it's still like a clinic environment in the sense that they're not coming in and knocking on the door because they've got an allotted appointment sort of thing. So it's different again. And, you know, then you've got your clinic time, but it's another way to work with sports teams that can help drive your business locally as well, if they're just down the road, which my guys are. So
that was an interesting one. Just briefly tell us, because what does that entail, sponsoring the team?
Giving them some money, Matt. So basically,
but that means you're paying them to then send people to you.
Yes. So essentially, I sponsor the team and I get banner on at the pitch side, and then they do social media posting for me and also kind of drive the team to me at the same time as me offering a clinic on site, which obviously then attracts people to come to my clinic as well. If they're dealing with an injury or they need more assistance with something, then, you know, they can come and see me.
That's pretty good.
Down the road as well. So it kind of—
Did you get a good deal?
And I have to say, I've made my money back, Matt, so it's all good.
There you go. Yeah, I wouldn't dare dream of asking how much, you know, you paid to do this, but you made your money back. So that's something you think people should consider. Yeah. Have a little chat with the local team.
Well, it's an option, and it's a pathway to go and work with a team. You don't necessarily have to sponsor the team, but you could try and get connected with a team, and perhaps maybe a more obscure sport or a more grassroots level sport is the way to go to be able to get that experience without being level 5 and actually applying for a job with a sports team, which can be a bit outreach.
Very interesting idea. Scott and Hazel, level 5s, what were you thinking? I don't know who you studied level 5s with. Scott, obviously you've done the rehabilitation, wasn't it, university?
Yeah, so I'm degree, so I suppose I don't really have that barrier. The Sports Therapy Association stuff kind of give me a bit of an insight into it. And to be honest, some of the job adverts as well, even as like graduate sports therapist, I've done a master's in it, and you still kind of go, you haven't got enough qualifications. Mm. You know, all the years of experience of working with sports teams to a high level and having a degree and a master's, you know, fresh out of university, physios will get a job over us in a lot of instances. Which is disappointing, but, you know, I knew that when I've known that for a long time, and I've come to terms with it. But I think the barriers to that are generally in football, probably more higher up the chains kind of professional stuff. I don't want to work in professional sport anymore. Made that decision to not. It's paid for ambition. It's very demanding. It's, you know, the pay you actually get paid for how much you're actually expected to do is not great. So I haven't really experienced the prejudices of a level 5. I've experienced the prejudices of being a sports therapist as not a physiotherapist, but it's not.
Yeah, which is what we're talking about.
In terms of the players, a lot of the time, are you just good at what you do or not? As long as you're insured and working within your scope of practice,
uh-huh.
footballers will forever call you physio, no matter how times you tell them, I'm going to see the physio, I'm going to see the physio. That is what you get. That's what it means to them. But all they care is just, are you good at what you do? Again, I'm not particular, and I never have been worried about working at elite sport, had a little taster of it, and you know what, it wasn't for me. I like working with the lower level. Yeah, no matter how many times you try and educate them about the difference, the coaches don't know. A lot of the time they haven't got a clue, but they just know, they just go on results, how you are, your communication skills, your relationships with everybody, and can you do what they want you to do?
Great advice. Yeah. Do you think to get in with a team, is it normal that you're going to have to do something for free to start off, or a very low wage and work your way up? Is that kind of for a younger therapist looking to get into it, do they have to kind of do a little bit of that?
Start off. When does wage go up? if it was solely about money for me, I wouldn't be doing it. It helps pay the bills, but it's not my main source of income by any stretch of the imagination. Earlier on in my career, and we're going back quite a few years now, I did stuff for pretty much just expenses. And it did get my name out there, and it did kind of lead on to other things. But looking back, you probably get taken advantage of a little bit, to be honest. And I always kind of use like with new therapists, and I've said it on the coffee chat, and I've said it to other people, like students and stuff. And I've actually said it to people who have asked me to do stuff. I'm like, oh, it'll be good for your experience. I'm like, I've been doing this for 20 years. I don't really need the experience, to be honest. If they want their lights fixing, they will pay an electrician to go and do it. So what, they're not going to offer them to do it for experience because they don't need that. So why should we kind of fall into that bracket? I think the more people that accept that kind of stuff, the more it will just become the norm. And I think we need to try and get away from that, if I'm honest. And I would try to promote people not doing it for free, because I think it just cheapens what we do.
Excellent. Hazel, what do you think?
I do stuff for free now if I want to do stuff for free. If I want to help out, and because I've got the time, which is very rarely. But I agree. I think we have a massive value, and yes to shadowing, mentoring in the early stages, but that is a completely different thing than going along and doing work for free. If it's benefiting you and you're getting something from it, you're becoming a better therapist to begin with, you're getting confidence, then great. But continuing to do it just because you think, oh, they'll start paying me, or I'll get people from this, I'll get my name out there, then that is the thing when you end up being used and abused a little bit.
Okay, so in line with this conversation, I think it's quite useful for therapists out there, especially if they're thinking of becoming part of a team. Are we of the agreement then that unless you can categorically see how this is going to maybe increase your exposure and this is just a stepping stone to something else, if you can't really see that, then it's worth kind of saying, well, no, I'm not going to do this just for experience. This is my way. This is what you're going to have to pay me. And that's what I'm worth. And then if they just say, well, no, we're not paying anything for the decision, walking away, is that what more therapists should be doing?
It's difficult to say, because I suppose I can't speak for every therapist.
It's a good answer.
But for me, I wouldn't do it anymore. And it's things like, you know, just travel. You know, sometimes you've got to travel an hour away. I mean, we travel 3-4 hours away for away games because it's kind of national level rugby. But the transport is provided, but it's still a long day. So if people are kind of doing, so even in the Northeast here, so if I take like the low level rugby up here in St. Crew, they'll play up towards Newcastle, and it's an hour and a bit, you know, and it's played on a Saturday. So you've got to go through band traffic. So if you're doing that as a therapist, as well as the game, you're probably going to be looking at like another 2 hours on top of it. So you're giving up a full day for next to nothing. So it's realistically, are you going to get a full clinic off treating those players? Probably not.
I think sometimes
really, really push you.
It's a case of actually the teams that will pay you, because I've been paid by real low, the lowest level, really, of cricket and football, and I've been paid okay. It's not what I earn in clinic, but it's okay. They put more value on you at that point. You mean more to them. You know that you've got the finance team, the management team at the club, the coaching team on your side. They value then what you say. Whereas if you're just going along for free, oh, well, doesn't matter, yeah, whatever. Whereas if you're working with the kind of people that want to pay you and want to pay you a fair enough amount, it's just going to find your life a lot easier. And there are teams out there that will pay and they realise what it's worth to them.
So I used an example with somebody not so long ago. There was a game where we had no injuries. I did some tape and strapping beforehand. We had no injuries, so it was a pretty easy day. They're like, oh, easy money for you today. I was like, yeah, but you're not paying for me to do this. You're paying for my experience when it gets bad and there's something bad happens on the field. But this season, we've had a couple of really bad injuries. Like, I'm sure the lad won't mind me talking about it. I was walking back dealing with a guy who had actually broke his nose, so we were dealing with that. I was looking this way and I heard a big scream over in this direction. When we watched the video back, it's horrendous. So the lad was tackled the top of his tibia. He carried on and his knee ended up completely the wrong way, bending the completely wrong way. And he had an ACL, PCL, lateral collateral ligament, a fracture and a nerve severed. So he's actually lost function of his foot. So what you're actually paying is for me to deal with that in a professional manner and get him off the pitch in a quick and professional manner rather than going, you know, because that's what you need. That's what you're paying for, that experience and that kind of being able to organise that situation rather than just being able to strap an ankle.
Hey there, Matt Phillips here. Sorry to interrupt the podcast. Just 60 seconds to remind you that if you're looking for beard grooming products, there is a Sports Therapy Association discount code that will get you 15% off at The Brighton Beard Company, website thebrightonbeardcompany.co.uk. Yes, I am biased, what with Brighton being my hometown, but the Brighton Beard Company really do offer an absolutely amazing selection of luxurious beard balms and impeccably scented oils, all handmade in small batches with 100% natural ingredients. Their current spring collection, for example, contains bergamot, coriander, thyme and lavender, giving you a fresh and energising essence with both citrusy and peppery notes, making it the perfect gift for you, a family member or any friend with facial hair. Go to thebrightonbeardcompany.co.uk and get 15% off now by entering the discount code STA15. Doesn't include already discounted bundles.
So it sounds like really, again, for a therapist, it sounds like if they are approaching a team, they could do with some advice from a more experienced therapist with how to talk to the people who are potentially going to be employers. Because if I was an employer and you sat down and looked at me like the way you're looking at the camera now and said that, I'd be like, yeah, you've got a great point, mate. Yeah, it's true. Actually, we'll have a little think about it and get back to you, you know, because it's, but unless you've got the confidence to say that and keep that blaze, which you've got, then you're not going to do it. People are going to walk all over you. So I guess one of the CPD, I think, for younger therapists who are looking to work pitch side is to learn how to manage and talk to potential employers, you know, to get conditions which suit you and that deserve it of your skills. Interesting. Right. I want to make this a little bit more like, I can't think of anybody who wanted to join a sports team now. It's all a little bit, sounds a bit down and gloomy. You're not going to get paid anything. People aren't listening to you. And let's go back to the good things about it. I want to talk about, let me have a little look at other questions that came in. This isn't going to be a downer, isn't it? I think weekend warriors. So one of the questions we had was, how do you put up with weekend warriors? It's difficult enough when you've just got people coming to the clinic who you know are not doing the exercises during the week. And then suddenly, you know, they're going out and doing their long run or something with friends and wondering why they get ITB syndrome or something. So with a whole team doing that. I know some of you got some experience with this. Have you got any tips on basically, it's more managing, isn't it? Managing a team where you know they are weekend warriors. And that was a question from somebody that's emailed it. Anybody? Weekend warriors? Anyone got any experience in that?
Yeah, it's probably probably what I've always been working with, really, lower ends and playing hockey, working a bit more of a minority sport, where we tend to have a lot of people who are playing later on in life, because they do tend to have a longer career in hockey, and they will do literally nothing throughout the entire off season, pick a stick up, play one pre-season game, then expect to go on to play a whole season. It's a massive challenge. And as well, there's some people I've still, I think, made very little to no inroads into changing their behaviours. And they just come and see you to put a sticky plaster back on it, and as much as you try. I think it's just trying to make little changes, trying to make reasonable changes, exactly the way we would rehab somebody in clinic who's got a busy lifestyle. It's, can we make little nips and tucks? Can we make, well, instead of doing that, could you actually give us 5-10 minutes every other day or something to just have a go at some strength work? And also, if you can, getting in there off season, getting in, well, could we put a little bit of a block in place pre-season? And even if you're confident enough to go along and perhaps say, and this might be an occasion where you'd perhaps work with somebody else, if you know a local gym or a strength and conditioning coach or something, I've gone where we actually work together and go, right, we'll run a session, show them what it can look like, work with the coaches, how can you integrate this into what you do pre-season, just before the season starts? Well, can you do, well, yes, do your skills coaching, but could you pop this in perhaps half an hour before your sessions? And just trying to change the general education level amongst the coaches, players, the people that you're working with.
Sounds good, to try and get them in the off season. I guess that's going to be a revenue income for you as well, isn't it? Working with them rather than just trying to stitch bits back together again during season. It's getting something going during off season. Lucy, yes. Experience of Wrecking Warriors? Oh, sorry. No, Hazel, I cut you off there. Go on.
No, you're all right. No, it's just because you get better results. So that you're going to look better if you can just get that little bit extra in. It makes you look loads better.
I think that's the big thing, isn't it? Because you're working with a team. It's the same if you're working individually. Reputation is so important, isn't it? And once upon a time, when people didn't do their rehab, or they didn't kind of like adjust their training to a sensible level or whatever it was, didn't take your advice, we used to blame them and go, well, how the hell are they going to get better if they didn't listen to me? But now we're kind of realizing that if a client or a patient doesn't listen to you, it's kind of the onus is on you. You didn't manage to change their behavior. Maybe you gave them something they couldn't do, or you didn't approach them in the right way, or get them to try and do the behavior change at the right time in their lives. But it is up to us. Part of our job, isn't it, to be able to help people change their behavior and their skills to do that. So it is something we need to invest in. We're always going on about it on the podcast, about looking for CPD updates, which help you communicate and help with behavior change, because it's what we do. And it's very tricky. Lucy, what's your experience with that?
I suppose from a touch rugby perspective, I'm actually the head coach of our local touch rugby side as well. So the mighty Thames Valley Vikings. I'll have to give them a plug on the pod.
Was that the mighty Thames Valley Vikings?
Thames Valley Vikings.
Thank you very much. The Thames Valley Vikings. Great.
thanks for the reiteration.
I just wanted to check.
Love it. So, and if anyone's in the local area, then they're more than welcome to come down to training Monday nights. But what we tend to find is we've got players who are playing, you know, England Men's Open or Women's Open, all the way down to someone who's never picked up a touch ball before in their lives. So it's really difficult to get any kind of prehab, rehab type stuff, or prehab certainly stuff going on, because you've got such a range of skills within the club, and not just skills, but sort of fitness levels and everything else, and level of commitments as well. So those people who are at the higher end of the sport are going to be doing all of the work that England Touch will set them as their prehab work that they're going to be working on. Whereas the rest of the club, you know, they might pick up a ball on a Monday night and have a run around, and then not pick up a ball until the next Monday night and have a run around and do nothing in between. So so it's a really broad spectrum, which is really challenging to try and get the right programs in place for the club itself. And I think one of the things that we've kind of worked on as a club, based on the sort of psychology of injury, I suppose, is that we've tried to keep those players who are injured connected with the club in some way, so that they're not just going down the gym and doing their rehab, because of the psychological factors that go along with it. And I think it's probably more challenging from a psychological perspective for those players who are perhaps the weekend warriors and that's what they do and, you know, that's their sport. Probably more, I know you had the podcast about runners, so probably more so than those who are just runners, because it's their social life as well. So you might be a runner who goes out and runs with a club, and but you might be an individual runner, and then when you get injured, it's just you doing your rehab and that's fine. Whereas when your whole social world is around the club and then you're not involved because you're injured, you know, that can be really difficult to manage. So it's then a case of, okay, well, how can we get these people involved, getting them involved in coaching? I don't know, I've had an example of that. We had a chap, I'm sure he won't mind me mentioning, but he bust his Achilles at the beginning of last season, and he's only just about getting back to running now, and we've had him in coaching for the last few months, which has really helped him stay connected with the club, you know, become more confident as a coach, and it's kind of changed, I suppose, how he's viewed in the club as well, which is really positive. So there's all sorts of things you can do from an injury rehab perspective and managing the emotional side of it.
That's very cool. What a great idea. Get involved in the coaching and the training, so he's still there and getting that social input and learning an extra skill along the way, which may well help with their own developments. That's great. I like that. Scott, weekend warriors, do you try to avoid them? Don't let the nuclear kill.
I can't avoid them. So, I mean, the club I'm at, so there's three senior teams as well as an old man team. And then there's the under 18s all the way down. And I'm the therapist at the club, which this season's been interesting. When people ask, who's in your medical department? And they've got an army of six of them. But it's because that brings its own challenges. I'll kind of reiterate what Lucy and Hazel said. So pre-season, so that was my third season that we've just finished. So I kind of had a good idea of what recurrent injuries we'd had. So in pre-season, so because it is a social club that plays at a high level, so the first team play at a high level, where everybody else is social, everybody joins in for pre-season. So the first pre-season gym session, we had 80 people turn up. So trying to plan a gym session for 80 people is very challenging. And this is from 17-year-old up to kind of blokes who are in their 50s and everything in between. So, but what I did was go, right, well, last season we had quite a few hamstring injuries. We had quite a lot of Achilles tendon injuries. So main focus of a lot of these gym sessions is going to be around that. And then we kind of reiterated that in. And a couple of other things we did was just change the warm-up slightly. So before training, we changed the warm-up. So we made it, rather than just everyone going out, booting balls about and stuff like that, we had a structured warm-up that targeted certain things. So that was also part of it. There was a little bit of strength kind of focus in there as well. So that kind of added into that bit where people go, I ain't got time to go to the gym, I ain't got time to do this. But actually, now it's part of your warm-up. So that kind of thing. And then going on to kind of keeping people involved, I think that's really important. So especially the longer term ones, no matter what level we're at, you know, I just drop them a message every now and again, come down to the club, you know, and I'll check you out. Because you get it in like the third team or the second team, or you might get a first team player who's been out for a long period of time, and you don't want them to disappear. They might just turn up at game time, but you want to keep them involved. So just drop them a message, and I just give them one of my sessions on a Tuesday or a Thursday. But then they come in and they get integrated with everybody. And sometimes it gets their motivation back up as well, because they're like, I missed this, I want to be back in this. So a lot of the players don't have time. They have full-time jobs to kind of, and then they have kids and they're coming to training. They haven't probably got time to do a lot of gym work. So it brings its own challenges massively.
Excellent. That's some lovely ideas and tips in there as well. And like you say, people are busy. But then again, a lot of people create this barrier where they think, oh, I haven't got time to go down to the gym for 2 hours, three times a week. And, you know, the research shows clearly that we're only really talking about, in most cases, depending on what your goals are, two sessions of 20 minutes would make a massive difference if we're looking at strength gains, whether that's tendons or just overall strength. So sometimes it's a bit of education in our jobs.
One thing I'd kind of just go back onto that. So depending on the level of sport. So we play on an Astro pitch, so ours is artificial pitch. And a lot of clubs hate coming to us. We train on it, so we're kind of conditioned to it. So lower down you go, you will play on lots of different types of services. And I think it's quite important to actually, if you're doing prehab and rehab and stuff, to actually consider that. So a lot of our injuries historically have actually happened when we've gone to away games and we've been training, we've been playing on an AGP, which is very firm and reactive and stable, and then go to a muddy field.
We have the same thing with touch all winter. We train on Astro or 3G pitches, and then when it comes to the season, we're playing on grass. And same thing, you have that transition of, you know, lots more achy bodies out there, let's put it that way, and possible then more injuries due to fatigue, because it's just different. It's like running in treacle. So it just makes a real difference.
That's very interesting. Yeah. So if you are looking after a team, then yeah, just make sure that you are training them for what their actual competitive day is going to be like. It's kind of, you've got to know your sport quite a lot. There's a couple of other things I wanted to, where are we? 8:51. I mean, one thing I want to quickly put in there for people out there, do you have to kind of play the sport of the team you're looking after, or can you get by without doing it?
I think it helps. Certainly think it helps, because, you know, you understand the movement patterns that those people are going to be doing repetitively. So you and you've done it yourself, and, you know, I suppose you understand and you can sympathize with some of what they might be going through if you've had the same kind of problems. But, you know, it's also about, I think any good therapist, it's about getting in the mind of the person you're treating who's in front of you. So you, and understanding the movements they're doing and things like that, getting them to demonstrate them to you and things. So if you're not doing the sport yourself, then you can kind of get your head around where those injuries or niggles are coming from.
Mm-hmm. Great. And your experience, Scott and Hazel, have you ever looked after a team that you've never actually played the sport, and it's only by watching them and training with them that you've kind of grown to understand the sport?
But rugby, I've never played it, but I've always had a kind of interest in it, I suppose. And I think if you've never played it, you need to have some sort of interest, or at least a want to learn. Like when I first came in, you know, I was like, right, I need to learn all the positions. I need to learn what the demands of the positions are and what that kind of thing. Because rehabbing a fullback compared to a prop is completely and utterly different. You know, you might have two injuries exactly or as close as you can get to each other, but actually treating them is completely different.
Good point.
Whereas the football is, I didn't know if that was a dramatic pause or not, but
In football, there's not a lot of variety unless you kind of go to a goalkeeper. Just, you know, there's a lot of twisting, turning, sprinting, that kind of thing. Whereas, you know, hockey will be very different. Rugby's very different. Basketball's, you know, so they all bring their own demands. So I think you need to have a good understanding of the sport. I don't think you necessarily need to have played it, but you need to have a good understanding of it.
So you've got to be a little bit geeky. You've got to enjoy looking into, investigating and researching that sort of personality.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Hazel, in your experience, have you ever looked after a team of a sport you never played? Or
I'm a massive sports fan, really, Simon. Through school and early life, I've played pretty much any sport to a kind of average level. I mean, I just loved it. Mm. So once you've got like the basis, you kind of know that there's a similar movement patterns, I guess. Mm-hmm. In terms of team sports, I don't think there's any. I mean, I've never played cricket, but obviously a lot. I suppose the difference being, actually, I suppose the bowling action in cricket, I can't really think of an obvious comparison to something exactly like that. So that was something that I did spend a little bit of time actually just watching. And just seeing, because what that, especially in a quick bowler, that front foot landing is really extreme. Mm-hmm. And often when you see stills of sports, like I watch hockey and you'll see an action picture and you're like, is that the position that someone's body gets into when like hitting a hockey ball or something? And it really does. And I think, yeah, just being a bit geeky and actually enjoying that and... Mm-hmm. And going and watching and seeing sport definitely helps. And it definitely helps just then build your relationship with the person playing it, because you've got common ground then. It can be really difficult. Say I go in and I'm treating a 17-year-old rugby player or whatever it might be on the face of it, well, we've not actually got a lot in common here. But if you can start to chat and get them walk some common ground on the sport, then that can help as well.
Great point. Yeah, love it. Really good. Well, look, time is defeating. There's something else I really wanted to talk about, but we didn't get around to it. And that was the differences in looking after female athletes compared to male athletes. And like Scott was already touching on, as with different players, but whether you've got female athletes or male, you're going to have different injury patterns, different profiles. I'm thinking what we might do in this season of Ask Us Anything is maybe therapy for female athletes. That could be a whole story on itself, couldn't it? But essentially, what are some of the things, just quickly, that, let's say, a therapist working with a female team should be more aware of, which they might not automatically think of? Anybody can answer that. What should be on your radar, which maybe you weren't taught in your level 4 or level 5 if you are working with an all-female team?
I think it's definitely worth upskilling in terms of hormone cycles, different stages, different issues that can become prevalent at varying stages. I mean, there's obviously the very, very well-known one of the ACLs, and I think recently there's been the Arsenal footballers, wasn't it, where there was two or three of them out. And there's been some great stuff on the STA, actually, that I've listened to. And it's been an area that generally in clinic as well that I've upskilled and want to upskill more on, because I think it really affects women athletes more than you realise sometimes. Oh, well, why am I really struggling? Why are my joints aching a little bit more, particularly older players as well, perhaps coming into different phases in their life? Also, pre-postnatal, you might have someone wanting to come back and saying, oh, well, I've done this, it's 6 weeks after and I want to start and play again, and just having that knowledge and the difficulties of helping someone negotiate through that phase of their life as well.
Excellent. Yeah. Yeah. And for you, Lucy, I mean, you've played and worked with all female teams. So what are some of the things which therapists should be aware of that maybe they haven't been introduced to in their traditional kind of learnings and certification stuff?
Everything that Hazel has said has basically covered everything I would have said, actually. So I think, you know, the return to sport after pregnancy is really interesting. And, you know, I'm also a fitness instructor and Pilates instructor, and have done a course in pre and postnatal exercise and have obviously looked into that to a certain extent. But I'd certainly be interested in learning more about it. I think it's probably another podcast topic, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. No, I think we will do therapy, Ask Us Anything therapy for female athletes. I think it's, warrants a whole hour to itself. Different injury profiles. Again, I'm sure it affects different sports as well. But with running, you know, if you have a female athlete come to you and they can have the same symptoms as a male athlete, but because they're female, you know, you're leaning more towards the chance of patellofemoral pain or something, patellofemoral issue, rather than something else which a guy might get. So it really is something which we haven't been taught enough, because the researchers haven't done it enough, and it hasn't trickled down to us. It's all the male researchers working on male subjects, and they've just missed the whole, you know, a whole series of different profiles. So, but we'll do a whole episode on that.
One thing I'd say on that, so from a male therapist perspective, if you're working with female teams, because I work with, so I'm going to give a shout out to our college netball team,
have they got a name?
So it's Hartlepool Sixth Form College.
Hartlepool Sixth Form College.
Very, very good team. Like, watching them play is outstanding. It's ridiculous. So they actually finished second in the national, so second best college in the country.
Congratulations, so, Hartlepool. Yeah.
So, but kind of, obviously these are adolescent females, you know, and I'm old enough to be their dad. So having the confidence to be able to kind of speak to them about certain things. So from a male therapist perspective, you know, I'm quite confident in the way I kind of talk to people with that kind of thing, especially one-on-one. But I think from a male therapist perspective, if you are going to be working with female athletes, you know, chuck the embarrassment kind of side of it and just be confident and kind of learn to kind of speak about certain things that you probably might not have the confidence to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good shout. And also, I think we've learned through the guests and through experience that don't imagine that the females you're working with have got it all sorted out and know all about it anyway. Because, I mean, I think from the guests I've talked to and the pelvic health specialists, a lot of women don't understand their own cycles, and they've got misconceptions and misinformation, and they've been they've gone to a world where the GP doctor has told them things like, I've just gone on the pill and it's normal to have this amount of bleed a month. And they don't know, you know. So a lot of therapists, male therapists, presume that they're embarrassed because women, well, this person's going to know all about this. But it's amazing how misinformed a lot of women are over that sort of stuff. So, yeah.
And I think it's only just recently we've actually been more, there's been more chat about it. And I mean, Lisa, you'll probably agree with this, having been in a team sport setting, that generally we probably chat about more things than your average. There's not a lot of conversations that are off the table. In a way, I think that's great. And we can, in a team, have a kid at 13. We can have us like in our 30s, 40s, and you can see them kind of listening, going, and they take a lot from that. And I think learning that confidence, it helps other aspects of your life.
Yeah, that's great. That's interesting as well. So in a team environment, can be quite healthy for some of these discussions. There'll be a place for one-on-one, but there's also a nice place where you can use the team. Good point. I like that. Yeah. Right. Well, look, there's so much more we could talk about, but that's where the time, I'm sure you guys have got other things to do for this evening, but I do appreciate you guys hanging around. I'm going to do the same old thing that I do. I should probably have pre-warned you this before we started, but I'm going to just talk about what's coming up on the Sports Therapy Association podcast. And then I'm going to come back to you three, and I just want you to think of a theory into practice. So something maybe you've talked about tonight or something someone else has mentioned that you want listeners to take away and put into effect tomorrow morning, sort of thing. Okay, so a little thing. It could be just one thing, or maybe two things, which you want people to take away when it comes to working with sports teams, therapy for sports teams. Okay, whilst you're thinking about that, what your one thing's going to be, then I just want to let listeners know that what's coming up. So yes, as I kind of mentioned at the beginning, I'm very excited. We've got a 3-part tendon special coming up. We had 2 shoulder specials. Now we've got 3 tendon specials coming up starting next week. They are all going to be being recorded live at 9 o'clock. So if you listen to the podcast and you do want to join and the live recording, then don't, this is the one time you don't come at 8 p.m. Okay. They're going to be 9 p.m. for the next 3 weeks because all my guests are going to be in Australia and it just changed from joining me at 5 o'clock a.m. to 6 a.m. Just gives them that extra kind of hour in bed. And I'm really excited to tell you who they are. So we're going to have next week, it's going to be Peter Maliaris, who's been on the show before. He's going to be doing tendon treatment, what the research says. All of these people are hugely respected. I can't just stress enough now, even if you haven't heard of them, and I hope you haven't, just look them up, Google search, and you will see the amount of papers published and respect they've got internationally. On the 21st, the week after, it's going to be Understanding Tendinopathies of the Hip and Pelvis with Dr. Alison Grimaldi, who again is a name that just appears on pretty much all tendon research, particularly to do with the hip and pelvis. That's also going to be at 9 o'clock on the 21st. And then on the 29th, which is going to be episode 200, we're going to do, Scott, hats, I don't know. Streamers for that, but yeah, episode 200 of something that just started in COVID, where we were deciding, do we have to wear our gloves still? Something that's now come to episode 200 is going to be at 9 o'clock. That's going to be managing tendon pain with special guest Ebony Rio, which is a hugely respected, again, tendon researcher, specifically on pain and understanding very complex nature of pain. So that's going to be on May the 29th. If you'd like to join us live for that one on the big 200, then that'd be wonderful as well. Not just drumming up business for myself, far be it for me to do that, but there is a webinar coming up to do with tendons, which is going to be proximal hamstring tendinopathy in runners. So if you do work with runners and you're interested in learning how to help the often tricky cases of proximal hamstring tendinopathy, then I've got a webinar coming up and doing for physique management on Wednesday, May the 15th, Wednesday for a change. And if you're interested in that, then you can find details across social media in the normal places for physique management and the SD School. But that all said and done. So a massive tendon month coming up, which is very exciting. Thank you, people in the live lounge who joined us. Thank you for your questions. Really appreciate it. And of course, most of all, thank you to Scott Loyance for joining us. Thank you, Scott.
Very welcome.
Thank you. And thank you, Lucy McDonald, for joining us on the SDA panel.
No problem.
Thank you. One day someone's going to say something as opposed to no problem, like
something more exciting.
I don't know what they're going to say. And thank you, Hazel Mike Cook, as well, for joining us as well.
It's been a pleasure.
There we are. I like that. It's been a pleasure. We like that. No, I really appreciate it. And hopefully, if you are listening to the podcast and you're an STA member and you like the sound of this, it's just sharing your experience. Therapists, I was saying to these people just before we started, some of our most popular episodes are these panel episodes. People just love listening to other therapists share their experience. It really kind of just helps learn and understand. And so it's a great opportunity for you to share and help other therapists. So just send me an email, matt@sta.co.uk, if you're interested. Like I say, in a month's time, I think we're going to do, Cecily persuaded me to do therapy for cyclists. I think that'd probably be it now. Otherwise, Cecily's going to have a go at me, the next therapy expert. Yeah, so therapy for cyclists will be in a month's time. And then maybe we'll do swimmers, and also we're going to do therapy for female athletes. There we go. If any of those interest you and you've got something to say, then hit me up and we'll put your name down for it. Right, that's it. Thank you very much for joining us. If you do want to join us live, then join us for the first part of the Tendon series next Tuesday, 9 o'clock on the Sports Therapy Association podcast.
You're listening to the Sports Therapy Association podcast, putting evidence back into soft tissue therapy.